Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday. Nope, it's not Tuesday. It's Wednesday, October 26th. I do actually have this 27th. I didn't change the date on that. My goodness gracious, I'm slacking today. Been working a little bit on my book. How about that? But today is Wednesday, October 27th. I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on that Chat Now button there at our homepage of Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That will get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name like the rest of us. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Rewarding to keep backyard chicken.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops,
accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run. But do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, it is Wednesday, Wednesday, October the 27th, October the 27th. And today's secret password is egg. Today's secret password for the chicken coop contest is egg, for those of you who are taking note of all of that. It is now time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, and all-around great lady, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat.
Oh, thanks, Whisper. I love it when you talk like that. Kind of chokes me up. It's always a treat. How are you doing today? I mean, we've had... My goodness, it feels like spring here in the Shenandoah Valley. In fact, my okra is even setting blossoms and is setting fruit. It feels like the Caribbean with that moist air coming down from that big storm that's in the Midwest. So it's strange weather here in the Shenandoah Valley, but it's absolutely perfectly drop-dead gorgeous. How are you doing down there in Atlanta? You feeling the storm at all?
Yeah, we've had some heavy storms across the northwest Georgia corner. We've had some heavy rain this morning, off and on just very light showers, nothing really considerable, a little windy yesterday afternoon, but today we've had some very, very heavy rains, a couple of claps of thunder, but that's about it. So I think most of it is basically northwest of Atlanta, specifically northwest corner as you're getting up towards Chattanooga, where all the big bad stuff is, and the tornado warnings and the hail and all of that kind of stuff. So we've been fortunate here just getting some good, well-needed rain, and we probably hadn't had rain in maybe a month, maybe just
really?
On just a little bit. Yeah, it's been probably a month since we had any rain. In fact, I guess maybe I've had my tractor for about a month, but ever since I had my tractor, I've kept note, and no rain really significant since then. So this is some well-needed rain for us, but it is balmy. You walk out in the mornings, it's quite humid and warm, but that's going to change. I think once this front moves on out later tonight, Tomorrow through the weekend is going to be beautiful, not a cloud in the sky. We're going to have highs probably in the very low 70s, 72, 70 to 72 high. And then lows are going to be down in the low 40s, maybe even the high 30s in some places over the weekend. So it'll be back to nice fall weather for all the trick-or-treaters out there.
Well, it's interesting. My mother lives in Indiana, of course, and they apparently yesterday had tornado warnings all over the place, and they even, I mean, this is the first time I've heard of this, they even had like a hurricane in the Midwest. I mean, usually you think of hurricanes as along the ocean, but apparently the weather front was so strong and so dynamic that they were even calling it a hurricane in the local news. How about that? But anyway, life on planet Path is pretty good. I mean, my little corner of the Earth here is absolutely gorgeous and green and growing and just beautiful. Great. Well, I got to warn you, Whisper, I went to the farmer's market and I went over to the
I know what's coming. Farm. I know what's coming.
That's right. I had my once a week cup of coffee. Actually, it's cream with coffee. It's what it really is. So I can feel it, though. I'm a little buzzed. Otherwise, I'm caffeine-free. But I'm in a great mood here. I mean, just romping along, galloping even. So amazing what a little caffeine will do when you're not used to it. So if it feels like fun, freaky, frolicky Tuesday, it's really happy-dappy Wednesday.
Exactly. And we're working on our way to getting March. getting our way over slowly but surely over to Fun Friday, which is always fun, but it is Wednesday. This week's not going quite as fast as last week did, at least for me, but maybe once we hit tomorrow being Thursday, it'll be downhill from there. Maybe so. Who knows? Because we do have a great show lined up for everybody today. Very excited again. The last Wednesday of the month, it is Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Peter, of course, is the founder of First State Vet Supply. You can visit them online, firststatevetsupply.com. He's going to be joining us today talking a little bit about avian TB, and then we'll have open lines so you can call in. I know I got a message earlier. Somebody's going to be calling in and talking about bumblefoot. They have a question for Peter Brown about that. And so we'll have open lines later in the show for your questions live on the air for Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So we've got that going on. Tomorrow we'll have a wonderful show with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Do we have a topic yet for tomorrow's show, Pat?
Not yet. It's percolating up. Richard's thinking about it. I do have my new issue of Back Home, though, my November-December issue, and it's got some really good articles in here that I suggested maybe Richard just consider some of these articles. But just if I can just talk about the Back Home issue for a second, they cover pigeons and doves, which is sort of really poultry-related, and pigeons, I'm learning more about, are absolutely amazing. And the other one they were covering was the crows, about crows. And I don't know about down there in Atlanta, but I've got crows here in my yard, and the chickens always, the rooster always chases them out, and then they call, and then they, so it's kind of a crow comedy out there many times. But so we'll have a topic shortly for Richard and see what makes sense for Back Home, our Back Home guy to talk about.
I got my issue this week, matter of fact, and it was awesome. I opened the mailbox, and there was my issue of Grit Magazine and my issue of Back Home Magazine there in one day. Talk about joyful reading. It was awesome. I always love to get those in the mail. It gives me some reading material during my downtime. So, I've got my magazine, Back Home Magazine, as well this week. So looking through it, flipping through it, and that'll be tomorrow's show. And then another great Fun Friday this Friday. We'll give away some more prizes from our sponsors. And let's see, we're going to go ahead. I do want to make an announcement here. There's very limited space left. In fact, if I can get Christina to post the link in the chat room for me, it may take a couple of minutes for her to find it on my Chicken Whisperer Facebook page, but if she can post the link to the registration form to register for the national webinar. As of yesterday, there were only about 223 spots left out of 1,000 spaces, I believe, only from what the numbers I got from USDA, 223 spots left. That was yesterday. There may be under 200 free spots available. This is going to be a national poultry webinar. It's in celebration of Bird Health Awareness Week, which is a nationwide event with the USDA, November the 1st through the 7th. Now, this national poultry webinar is going to be on Friday, November the 5th. Friday, November 5th. We had a run-through earlier this week. We have another official run-through with the webinar using PowerPoint, the whole kit and caboodle, dress rehearsal, if you will, tomorrow afternoon, getting ready for Friday, November the 5th, national webinar in place of this radio show. You do have to register. Then you'll get email reminders to go to the webinar, and you just click a link, and there you go. You can come and participate. You can visualize the PowerPoint presentation, obviously, during the webinar. It'll be myself and Dr. Smeltzer, who's an avian vet with the USDA, and it's going to be a good review. The majority of the webinar is probably written and produced for maybe the beginner, maybe someone who's had poultry for within the last year. But the questions that we've already got sent in, we've had over 100 questions sent in from poultry owners, Becca. We're going to be taking more difficult questions and answering those during the webinar to keep the ones that are more experienced in check. So we will, but literally less than probably 200 seats left of this national webinar, Biosecurity for Birds, called The Word on Healthy Birds, and that's going to be Friday the 5th, we will not have a radio show that day. That is one day that there will not be a secret password for the chicken coop contest we've got going on right now. And so the link has been posted in the chat room. Thank you very much, Love for Poultry. And, of course, I posted it yesterday. I will probably post it every day or every other day so people can sign up, and I will let you know when all the spots have been taken, which may be by the end of this week or beginning of next week. Just depends on how many people take the urgency to sign up. So it's going to be a good one, and we hope you can join us for that. So I wanted to get that out there to all of our live listeners from around the country and really around the world. No matter where you're at in the world, you can participate in this webinar. I'm going to go ahead and shoot on to Chickens in the News. Our Chickens in the News segments are brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. Visit them online at MeyerHatchery.com. As many of you know, we'll be broadcasting live from Meyer Hatchery. We'll be broadcasting on location at Meyer Hatchery on Friday, November the 12th, and then Friday, November the 13th, we'll be broadcasting live from the Ohio National up there in Ohio. You can get information about Meyer Hatchery, again, at MeyerHatchery.com. You can get information about the Ohio National Poultry Show, largest in the country. And in fact, I got an email today, an update that it's going to be the largest ever ABA, American Bantam Association event ever in the history of the ABA. It's going to be the largest ABA event ever in the history of the ABA, according to the email I got this morning. So it's 6,000-7,000 entries already. It's amazing and growing. So that'll be the 13th of November. How cool is that? So Chickens in the News. I've got one here that I'm going to share with you. And we've been following the story very closely because it's right in our back door, about an hour and a half to 2 hours right up the road there in Chattanooga, Tennessee, or Chattanooga, Georgia, depending on where you're, which side of the line you're on. And let me see if I can get this to open up. And this won't make a lot of people happy. I've got my 2 cents worth it, but this was breaking news as of today. Compromise plan offered to bring chickens to Chattanooga. Karen Walsh, executive director of the McCamey Animal Center, on Tuesday floated a compromise plan for bringing chickens to Chattanooga. She told the city council it was an alternative to not allowing chickens in the city on the one hand and to make it possible for residents to raise chickens in their backyards on the other hand. Ms. Walsh said an alternative would be to have 3 sites, like community gardens, where residents could participate in chicken raising. She said it would be similar to having communal gardens. Ms. Walsh said 3 possible sites would be the McCamey Animal Center in the DuPont area, Crabtree Farm on South Chattanooga and Greenway Farm in Hickson. She said it would be much easier for her staff to regulate, right? Don't you love that word, government lovers out there? She said it would be much more easier for her staff to regulate the chicken raising with the three sites than if it were chickens being raised all over town. Wah, wah, wah. City council members had a crowded agenda and did not address the issue or the latest chicken issue plan from her. So very interesting there. I wanted to share that with you because we are following that news in Chattanooga. Now, my only two cents worth here is that, okay, now I'm supposed to take time to get in my car, drive across town, emissions, gas, time, effort, traffic, wrecks, red lights, and go and feed my chickens. Some people do that daily. And then turn around, maybe collect eggs, turn around, drive home, waste gas, have emissions, not very green, possibly have a wreck, all these red lights, and getting back home to keep my chickens. That you're saying that you'd rather have people do that, that doesn't sound very green to me or self-sustaining than having chickens on their own, on their own property that they pay taxes on, which I don't think anywhere in the Constitution that says they can't raise chickens on their own property that they own. So I think this is fairly ridiculous in my two cents worth. How about you, Pat? Pat Foreman, are you out there?
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. There was a little chicken ruckus just outside my office door. As everyone knows, my coop is really up here close to the house, so it sounded like some sort of an alarm, and I put myself on mute so my rooster wouldn't interrupt you. But I agree with you totally that everything you said is absolutely right. Why waste gas and all that time and everything just to be able to feed the chickens? So, you're right on.
Yeah, I just thought when I saw that was pretty ridiculous. And, of course, she used the good old term regulate. They have to feel like they have to regulate everything into the ground. You know, if it ain't broke, fix it till it is. That's, I think, the government philosophy. If it ain't broke, fix it till it is. Oh, man. It's just pretty insane, if you ask me. So that was the one chickens in the news. I wanted to share with you that, as well as the webinar that we have coming up. So hang on 1 second. Okay, no problem. I was getting a message. I thought it might be pertinent to the radio show, so I had to check that real quick. All righty, you know what? It's time for, believe it or not, let me open up something here and make sure that I get prepared for this as well. We have a lot of hang on 1 second. Give me a second, folks. Got to bring it back up. You have some news, don't you, Pat?
Yes, I do. I've got one here, Whisper, and this is a little disturbing. And I was contemplating it this morning, thinking, well, I think I might follow up on this. This comes to us from Payson, Arizona, and it's from their newspaper, the Payson Roundup. Now, this is a farm community out there, and it's by Peter Alshire, and it says, Council chickens out. The town abandons the new poultry law. And this sounds like it was kind of a shotgun approach, and it's short, but I'm just going to read it. It says here the Payson Town Council ran for cover like a hen from the shadow of a chicken hawk last week and abandoned an attempt to loosen the rules on backyard poultry. Several residents, now here's the key, several residents, how many is several and who were the residents? So several to me means three. But several residents showed up to cry foul concerning the plan to allow hens in most residential neighborhoods. Here's a quote. The noise is terrible. They're just cackling all the time, said Robert Rush, whose neighbor has about 8 hens, no rooster, just hens. For some reason, people think that hens don't make noise, but his daughter can't take an afternoon nap, he complained. You know, and of course we know that the hens, that their loudest, that their absolute loudest, have a decibel level of about 50, which is just a little bit more than human conversation in a room. So that's one person that says, okay, now my daughter can't take a nap, and so we're out with the hens. So anyway, the council quickly backed away from the proposal as feathers flew at the second public hearing on the proposal. This is just the second public hearing. The people who supported the ordinance didn't show up, but they had previously gathered 13 names on a petition asking for the town to allow chickens on similar residential lots. So that means they kind of let down their guard. It sounds like everything was going okay, so they kind of relaxed a little bit. So they didn't have the representation that they had had during the first public hearing. And so currently the town code requires homeowners to have at least an acre in order to keep chickens and other farm animals. So, you know, we're allowing popping chickens in here with other farm animals as livestock. The petition argued, quote, in consideration of the difficult economic times that we live in and in the spirit of the magnificent U.S. Constitution, love this, the prohibition on having chickens for the production of fresh eggs and personal use should be lifted. So they're saying we've got the right to raise our own food. It is incomprehensible that we boast of our freedom and cannot have chickens for fresh eggs, end quote. So the proposal initially had drawn very little reaction. The last time it became before the council, and this sounds like it's a might even be a public hearing council, and the town staff had drawn up a possible ordinance that would require chicken owners to get a conditional use permit, which would give the town zoning and official control over the placement of the hen house, the fencing, the noise, and all the health issues. We know all the subjects, don't we, Whisper? But it said the staff recommended the change in the town's chicken ordinance, including, quote, many communities have adopted zoning regulations that allow ecologically sustainable practices, such as community greenhouses and keeping poultry. So the staff is behind this. The whole staff is behind this. The town plan, well, I don't know about the whole, but the staff had recommended it. The town planner, which is Sheila DeShaff and Gilbert Chandler and Prescott from Phoenix and Prescott. Okay, these are the towns of Prescott and Phoenix. They allow poultry on lots smaller than an acre. So there's precedents out there in Arizona. Ironically enough, though, the Payson, this city, this town in Arizona, has relied on ranching and logging for decades and has long celebrated its rural Western heritage. Well, boys, it says, forget all that. The public hearing on the chicken ordinance, one public hearing, and the council's reaction, which was totally, you know, in reaction, suggested that those old days are a long way behind Payson now. Here's the shocker. The council voted 7-0 to reject their staff recommendations and leave the current ordinance unchanged. So that's sort of, I think, an adverse way of how the power of one or just a few people is really influencing, you know, the silent majority in this case. They just didn't show up. Either they didn't see it coming, but given they had the staff support, or I can't believe they don't care. So anyway, that's, dang, that makes me ruffles my feathers. I can't even get tongue tied. It feathers my ruffles. I mean that a few people that are vocal, you know, come up and they're emotional. They get the whole city council in an emotional reaction, and they just vote against allowing food producing chickens for the whole of the town of Payson, Arizona. So, what to do? What are we going to do, Whisper?
There's a lot of things that I think we could do, but I don't think a lot of it's legal or appropriate.
No, we want to stay legal. Well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to call the city planner and just get in touch with the people and ask them what really happened and see if we can't get another appeal to city council and make it clear that if it's not this city council, it will be the next city council that has chickens as a position for the candidates. Because this is just a slap in the face to local foods. It's absolutely an insult to the local foods movement. And then they claim to be an agrarian and a farm-based community. There's our Western pride, boys. Well, you know, they just chalked it, their whole heritage of pioneers, because a few people say their daughter can't sleep because hens are cackling next door. I mean, let's connect the dots here. So,
with all reality, their daughter is probably back there playing her Xbox or her Nintendo or her whatever her game.
On, doesn't she?
Yeah, exactly. She's back there watching South Park or whatever. She's glued to the TV, or she's, you know, playing her Xbox or her Nintendo game. So yeah, realistically, that's probably what's happening. Using their kids as an excuse, like so many parents do. But that's a whole other topic and subject. But so, yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. If you want to contact them, that would be great. Invite them on the radio show. Put the pressure to them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll find out who on the staff. I'll get the town planners to come on because I think that's a good story. But you know, just to out of the emotion of a few to sway everything that had been built up to that point, it's not a good reflection on the thought process or even the analysis ability of city planner of the city council members. I think that's really really a black mark on their record to react that emotionally. I'm sure they had their discussion and their reasons and all this, but again, it brings up all the fear mongering, I think, and just the reaction about myth rather than facts with urban chickens.
Yeah.
So,
as always. Yep, as always.
Well, not always. No. We've got over 500,000 cities in the last 2 years have gone more with the facts. So they're in the minority. Increasingly, these towns and cities are in the minority. So we are making progress. We're making great progress.
But it's just in every one of those cases, though, that's just you're bombarded with the stereotypes and the myths and the rumors and the things like that. Indiana Chick says, what about neighbors with dogs that bark? Are puppies that yelp, are boomboxes that blast at all hours of the night. They don't seem to be wanting to be the band boomboxes or loud music and from cars and puppies and things like that. So she has a very good point. And Love for Poultry says that her kids sleep through about 15 roosters crowing at 4 a.m. So guess something you get used to, I guess.
That's right. Well, if they have meditation training, of course, you can use those loud noises to put you deeper and to go into more of that peaceful, tranquil space of the mind. So anyway.
Very good.
Anyway, this one got caught in my craw, so I think I'm gonna follow up on it.
Feathers your ruffles. How about that? In fact, I think Bard Rock said there's a potato chip commercial somewhere in there. Feathers my ruffles.
Feathered my ruffles. That's no question about that.
All righty, folks. If you're looking for something, you want to find it at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And you need to get sold on BidBird. That's BIDBIRD, BidBird.com. And every Wednesday at this time, we welcome Jesse from BidBird.com on the radio show to feature a couple of auctions that they have going on right now at BidBird.com. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Ms. Pat. Hello, Andy. How are you guys?
Hey, Jesse. Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Hey, you know, we've just had an awesome past week, and we've sold a bunch of birds, and especially a lot of bantam call ducks. And, you know, lately we've had over 1,000 unique visitors a day visiting the pages of BidBirds. One of the fun aspects of BidBird is that it's always changing, and you never know what you just might find. So with that in mind, today at our featured auctions, we have a dozen lavender Orpington eggs that are put up for auction by Kathy Peters down in Waverly Hall, Georgia, which is just a little bit south of you, I think, Andy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Her username is LP Chicks. She says that these lavender Orpingtons are large to medium-large birds. They're very friendly, and she says they're the best egg layers she has, and they lay all year. And speaking of driving down, there's only a couple hours from me, Andy. She has a lavender Orpington cockerel that is going for a penny. So, a little trip down there, Andy. And you know, we were talking about pigeons earlier. We have an Indian fantail that has been put up for auction by Ron Ewing out of Missouri, I think, if you're up north. It's a young 22-ounce male with 30 feathers in its tail feathers. So even if you don't want to bid on this bird, certainly head over and take a look at them. These are not your rooftop roosters or your rooftop roosting type of pigeons. So head on over there and look at those two auctions, and that'll do it for today, Andy.
No, that's cool.
Wonderful.
And that's at bidbird.com, and BidBird Auctions.
Yep.
You can go and find what poultry you are looking for there. We encourage you to do so. And the top poultry auction site in America, and we appreciate to be associated with you guys, and wish you guys good luck, and go there and visit bidbird.com. I appreciate you coming on, Jesse.
Thanks, Andy. Just one more quick thing. You know, believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner. And with that in mind.
Yes, so there's 58 days, I believe.
Oh, my goodness, yes. It's time to start shopping. And, you know, with that in mind, we're going to have some exciting things coming up in a couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that.
Wonderful.
I think I have an idea what you're talking about, and that is pretty awesome. But, yeah, 58 days, 21 hours, and 10 minutes until Christmas, but who's counting?
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Andy. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you very much. All righty, folks. That was our Bidbird portion of today's radio show. Every Wednesday, Jesse comes and joins us and gives us a special that they've got, or highlights a couple of auctions that they've got at bidbird.com. We're going to go to commercial break. It's Wednesday, the last Wednesday of the month, which means we're going to welcome wonderful, wonderful guest, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. When he returns, we'll be talking all about avian TB, and then we're going to open up the phone lines, as well as questions from our chat room chickeneers, and talk all about your questions that you have about your backyard poultry. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back with First State Vet Supply.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, the incubation specialists. Brinsea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937.
Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Manapro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for Manapro products at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for Super Chicken. You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Somebody asked in the chat room if there was a coupon code for Berensi. They may be interested in getting a candler. They got some fancy candlers, let me tell you, are one of their incubators. And, yes, it is Whisperer. You'll get 10% off your entire order when you order via on phone or online at Berensi.com, when you use the coupon code WHISPERER. Now, we are going to change that to just WHISPER. All of the other coupon codes that we have that are out there are just WHISPER. We just figure it makes it a little bit easier than having people figure out as WHISPERER, another ER on the end. So, but, yes, right now the Berensi 10% off code is WHISPERER. So I just wanted to get that out there to you. It's now time to bring on our good friend, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. We're going to talk a little bit about avian TB and then open up the phone lines to your general questions today for the Chicken Doctor. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today, as always.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I couldn't be better. Sweeter than snuff and half as dusty.
Yep, I'm doing well over here as well, so can't complain.
Hey, Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Pat, how are
you? Glad you're joining us. I always learn so much from you. I'm looking forward to this. So now Whisper, you're what was that again? Sweeter than snuff and half
sweeter
as dusty?
Yep, sweeter than snuff and sweeter than snuff and half as dusty. Of course, some days I'm finer than frog hair split four ways. Now, that's pretty fine. So,
That's pretty fine.
But today
forgive
is
him, Peter.
Yep.
He doesn't know what he's doing. But he's a sweet guy.
They put a microphone in front of my face and said, here, talk.
That really is funny. That's very funny. Go ahead.
All righty. No, I'm ready for Peter to. Well, first get your pen and paper out because you're always, like I said, Pat said, we learn so much from the experts we have on the show, and Peter is one of those. And so today, I'd never heard. I'll be the first one to be honest with you. I'd never heard of avian TB before in my entire life, and so I'm just as anxious as the rest of you to learn about it, how rare it is, if it's rare at all, and what the symptoms are, and I mean, and see what the risks are. So we'll talk about that, and then, like I said, we'll try to open up the phone lines a little bit later for all of your general calls. 347-637-3237. I'll go ahead and give you the number. 347-637-3237. You can go ahead and call and get in queue. You can also listen live when you call in. When you call, press 1 so we know that you want to ask a question for Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. All righty, Peter, we are ready to learn.
Okay. When I went to college, I never saw a case of avian tuberculosis. We studied it as we would any of the other diseases that were available for us to study, but I never saw an actual active case of it. And what piqued my interest in it here several years ago, I did come across two field cases of it, which is exciting on one hand, because you get the opportunity to see something that you've not seen and actually get to see it up front, close, and live. So it is an exciting thing from that aspect. But it does occur in poultry, as it does in many other animals. Most folks probably don't realize that most cattle are tested for tuberculosis. It is a problem in cattle, deer, elk, pretty much almost everything out there, animal-wise, mammal-wise, has a problem at one point or another with tuberculosis. The government has spent a lot of money recently updating their testing, so now instead of it taking 3 months to get a confirmed case, they can do it in 3 days. Usually they do the time test like they do when most of us went to school or whatever. If you felt you were exposed to tuberculosis, you'd go to your doctor and they'd have this little stabber thing and stab you on the shoulder with it and then come back in a few days and read it. And if it's lumpy and bumpy, you've been exposed. Doesn't necessarily mean at that point that you are a carrier. Depending on the size of the lumps and bumps would determine whether or not you would have to seek further further help, and obviously part of that would be whether or not you were exhibiting any of the symptoms. Tuberculosis in this country, as far as humans are concerned, is a big problem with people allowed to live on the street these days, which has been going on for quite some time. A lot of the human tuberculosis in this country is resistant to almost all antibiotics in this day and age, and that problem exists because people, number one, allowed to live on the street. Number two, when they become ill, they go to a clinic, they're given medication, and as soon as they start to feel better, they don't come back. And they never finish their course of treatment, therefore the tuberculosis organism over a period of time changes itself just like most other bacteria do. And,
Peter, just a couple of questions, but one from the chat room, they'd like to hear you talk just a little bit louder. If you could, maybe get your headset or whatever you're using up a little closer to your mouth.
I just changed it.
I hear you fine.
If it's closer to my mouth, it'll be in my nose. So.
Oh, well, that's not funny. Don't do that.
See if that's any better. I don't know. We've had some crazy weather out this way. I don't know if you all got the wind and stuff, but we've been getting rain and wind.
Oh, we have. Yeah.
Anything else? So that might play into it just a little bit. So I'll try to speak up a little bit.
Oh, okay. Peter, one of the questions is, when you take a bird in to be tested for TB, do you have to sacrifice the bird, or can they do the little skin test the way they do with people?
They do the skin test, and I don't know, you know, if a laboratory would do it for you. I would call and ask. But I thought this was something that would be interesting for everybody to let you know that it is there, and we'll go through how your bird could possibly get it. And those kind of things. But I wanted to throw out there that there is a huge problem with tuberculosis, human tuberculosis, in humans that doesn't seem to want to go away.
In fact, the incidence is increasing across the world. It's one of the top 10 diseases across the world that is infectious diseases.
I have read information. Oh, it's probably a year ago since I've read it, but at that particular time, tuberculosis worldwide is supposedly the number one killer. But sometimes you can read that for a lot of different diseases. I think it depends on where the information is coming from and how accurate it can be. A lot of these third world countries have a terrible time with it because of the fact of sanitation, living in close proximity to their animals, and that kind of thing, and then not having the medication either, and eating contaminated meat and so on and so forth.
Right. Well, as I understand it, Peter, and correct me if I'm not right, but pretty much the tuberculosis, it's everywhere. It's sort of like
That's correct.
Yeah. So if you've got your immune system is up, and you're doing pretty good, the bacteria are there, if nothing else, from wildlife and of course from other people. But so this it's not unusual. I would think if a chicken gets stressed, the same thing happens. Usually they're immune to it. Am I right? And if they get whacked out, then they're more susceptible to displaying this?
An impaired immune system, whether it be poultry or bovine or human or swine or anything else, certainly lends itself to coming down with TB if you're exposed to it. Several other factors. It is everywhere. It's in nature. Just like
and it's evolving.
Briefly about avian influenza. It's everywhere. If you look for it, you'll find it. It's in the soil, basically. That's where it lives for the
right.
most part. This has been a problem many years ago when most poultry were grown on the ground in smaller flocks and backyards and fields and what have you. The biggest problems with this basically was out in the Midwest and the north central states, and it was not as prevalent down south in the far western states. Now, that could have been because it probably maybe at that point in time did not rear many birds like some of the other states did in more central Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and places like that. But it does come from the soil. Back in the day when birds were grown in the backyard, more prevalent than they are today, they were responsible for about 1% tuberculosis was of all the what we call poultry condemnations. That would be a bird that was condemned in a processing plant for any number of reasons, whether it's been Marex or air sacculitis or anything like that. So I don't know the number of birds that were raised back then, but it was fairly significant, and 1% of them were not edible because of it. So it was a problem then, and with the advent of birds being reared in cages and or in confinement within a poultry house and not having access to the soils on the outside of that house, this has predominantly gone away. But it still does exist. It is a bigger problem in swine. It is a bigger problem in humans. It is a bigger problem in cattle. And here in the United States, they are the USDA is trying to eradicate this disease, which I think is going to be pretty tough.
Yeah, good luck with that one, right? You have
yeah.
to sort of sterilize the whole planet.
Yeah.
Peter, now, is it really a problem in backyard poultry to the extent, because one, the chickens are out in the sunlight, they've got their little nostrils down in the soil, and the soil, of course, good soil has anti-tubercular from the streptomycin bacteria that are in there. In fact, I just saw the movie Dirt, a wonderful show. I highly recommend it to everyone. But they were saying that the old tuberculin sanatoriums, they would recommend going to a churchyard and burying your nose in some dirt. I mean, just really breathing the dirt from there, and that they were getting some of the streptomyces as an antibiotic. So the question is, that was a long introduction. The question is it really a problem in backyard our family flocks the way it is?
No, it's not. I put it out here because it's unique. It can present itself to be a problem, and in at least two cases that I know of, it did present itself as a problem. It's again comes from the soil, and soils that are rich in iron have a tendency to lend themselves to the tuberculosis organism more readily. More acidic soils have a tendency to do that. So, I would suggest to anybody that may have any kind of concern, I would probably lime my yard once or twice a year, help change the pH. I would do that with an agricultural type lime. This would be different from the regular lime that you would put on your lawn. Most garden centers wouldn't have it. You'd probably go to a co-op or any place where a farmer buys his fertilizer and seed. Some areas of the country, they call it a burnt lime. It's called agricultural lime. There was one other name for it. I can't remember off the top of my head. It'll come to me after a while. But this lime has been altered chemically a little bit, and you can't let the birds stand on it. It'll burn their feet.
Yeah.
So you'll put it down on the soil and either work it in or let it wash it in or let the rain wash it in, but keep the birds off it till that has been accomplished, and then they'll be fine. And it'll change the pH of the soil, and a whole lot of stuff won't live there. So it's a good habit to get into. it also helps lower that pH of the soil, so that you don't have some of these problems, especially a unique problem like this one.
Peter, I've got to ask this question then. If,
sure.
if you lower the pH of the soil, one, how low do you want to get it? And then two, what does that do, of course, to the other soil dwellers? Does it also clear them out?
It can. Sometimes people will use this to try to drive out worms and that kind of thing. When I say lower it, I don't think you really want to get it low. You want to get it down to almost neutral.
To 7, to a pH of 7?
Yeah, 7, 6. I don't think I'd want to go lower than that. And most things have difficulty living there. That's, again, and I hate to keep saying this to people, but that's how oxine works, making it so
mm-hmm.
that it changes the pH of the water that you're using to disinfect with, and therefore makes it hard for the organisms to live there. So, all of this stuff is a great tool. I'm not saying to take oxine and go out and put it on your yard. It wouldn't be effective. Most have disinfectants will have difficulty working on organic material. But at any rate, this is something that I would consider doing with the lime. I think it's a great tool, for people to keep their place healthy, not only from this disease but others. Coccidiosis will have a tough time living there. E. coli will have a tough time living there. So I just think it's a good tool for everybody to use.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
The other thing, Peter, that will lower the soil pH is, as I recall, is wood ash. Could you use that maybe as a more gentle form of lowering pH? Ash from your fireplace?
Here's where the wood ash comes in, to my knowledge. Now, you can make lye from oak wood ash just by taking the ash and putting it in a container that's got holes in the bottom and then running water through it, and what comes out basically is almost like lye.
That's true.
It's been used as a warmer for chickens many, many years ago when they didn't have access to to any kind of warming material. So I don't know. I don't know how well that would work. But I guess as a liquid, it would get into the soil quicker than the lime. So I don't necessarily see it being a problem. Just having enough ash to cover a significant portion of the yard where the birds are. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Maybe if you turn it into a liquid and use the liquid then to counteract anything in the soil, that might not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just kind of routinely put ashes from my wood stove out in the chicken run because it I have a deep mulch run, so it helps.
I don't see it hurting anything, for the most part.
I got a little off by itself.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a little off topic there, Peter. Sorry about
that.
Okay.
It all goes into the mix.
No problem. We use lime, and we've used lime for years, as long as I can remember. We could probably do it 3 times a year. Due to laziness, we do it at least twice a year. We'll go out and we'll take the garden tiller, and we will till our run, so we make sure we get drainage. After we till, we kind of rake it out with a metal rake and get it somewhat smooth. Then we put down powdered lime. Some people call it pulverized. There's pulverized lime. We try to find powdered lime if we can, powdered, pulverized. And we open up a few bags and spread it out over the soil we just tilled. And we spread it probably about a quarter of an inch thick throughout the entire run. And then on top of that, we add 3, 4, 6 inches of wood chips on top of that. We've done it for years. We've never had a problem of it burning their feet or problems with ingesting it or anything. And
that's
it
good.
Really, really, for our end, we do it for to help a little bit with the odor. And it works very, very well. We could probably do that 3 times a year with our schedule and whatnot. We do it at least 2x a year. We're due coming up any day now to do it again for winter, spring. And then we'll do it late spring, and that'll get us through summer and fall. But and we've never had any problems with the lime doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. So, excellent.
All righty. Carry
problem,
on.
The problem with this tuberculosis organism, whether it be the avian type or any other, is that the organism itself is extremely hardy, lives very, very well outside the bird's or human's body. That's why... you know, people who have TB who spit on the sidewalk and stuff, it'll stay there for a long period of time. The cell wall is very thick, number one, and number two, the cell wall is has a very high, what they call a lipid or fat content. So it has a layer there that protects it very well from disinfecting heating and cooling and so on. So I think that's one of the reasons why it lives very well. Because if you look at some of the areas that we talked about where this used to be prevalent, Midwest, North Central states, that kind of stuff, pretty cold out there, you know, compared to where you folks are. And, it stayed active there. And these cases that I'm talking about came from out that way. So it is an interesting thing. But it does live very well outside the bird's body. If I were rearing poultry now in a backyard situation, I don't think I'd lose any sleep over this. I would be aware of the fact that it's out there. I would, do the liming 2-3 times a year. Keep things picked up, keep the place from becoming sloppy, which is tough to do when you get a week and a half of torrential rains. And birds obviously are notorious for tearing up any kind of grass you'll put out there. But if you can keep, the mud holes from becoming a problem and that kind of stuff, I think most of us would do all right,
Yeah. Peter, another question, and since it's kind of hard to diagnose, will the birds generally just get over it, if either get over it or die, or is this something that they can linger on with for months?
I feel it. That most birds that actually get this will end up dead, one way or another. Having the disease is one thing. Once it starts to actually break down the bird's system, there's no turning back. So I think that most birds, we talked about before, that more than likely most birds will just blow this off as no big deal, maybe have already been exposed to it numerous times and never had any symptoms of it or anything like that. But on the other hand, once the deterioration of the inside of the bird, the organs, the liver and things like that start to become infected with this, it's a done deal. The medications that you would normally use, for humans, would be something that you would probably use. But especially the streptomycin, but it's hard to find streptomycin these days because it used to be the number one line of defense against human tuberculosis. Anybody that's been in poultry a long, long time and has used any kind of antibiotics might remember Combiotic. It was a combination of penicillin and dihydrostreptomycin. And one of the reasons it was taken off the market is the government did not want that streptomycin in the food chain, whether it be cattle or anything else. They didn't want it out there. And it used to be a great product. I mean, if you had a bird with a respiratory thing, you just whack them with that stuff once or twice and done. It was... tremendous product, but it's probably 20 years now. It's been off the market, and it was but that was the main reason for it. And that's the main reason why we're going to lose a lot of antibiotics eventually anyway.
Yep.
I would say in the next 20 years, you'd be hard-pressed to buy an antibiotic anywhere that you can give to anything. And that's just my feeling on it. Probably won't live to see it, but that's the that's my gut feeling on it, just from the way that things seem to be going now with the commercial poultry industry and their unwillingness now to jump on antibiotics as the first line of defense, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things to consider, too, Peter, I'm sure you know this, but the streptomycin sort of family of antibiotics, streptomycin, gentamicin, tobramycin, all those can cause permanent hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's true with chickens or not and how we would ever measure that, but that's one of the things that as a pharmacist I always tell people if they're taking the prescribed these drugs and their doctor never tells them, but just be careful because it can cause some hearing loss. Sometimes it's reversible, but sometimes it's not, and I think that's what happened to my brother.
I think with most people today, if you look at some of these commercials they have on TV for some of these drugs, and they go through a list of the side effects, you might be better off to live with the disease. You know, one of them comes to mind with I haven't seen it on TV in a while, but it's a toenail fungus medication. Instead of doing anything topically, you just take this stuff, and it's got about 35 different things that could happen to you, including liver failure. I think I could live with it. with the fungus.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it is, and everybody's always looking for an easy way out. So, but this is easily spread from infected droppings from bird to bird. It can also be spread by birds sneezing, coughing, snottiness, and whatever, just as it would be from a human. Just about the same thing. It can be shed in the eggs of infected birds, but generally speaking, only a small percentage that ever happens to. Old research from way, way back said about 5% of the eggs that were tested from naturally infected birds actually contained the organism in a live state. And those that were artificially infected in a laboratory didn't have as many birds, eggs rather, infected. The other thing is most people don't eat eggs raw. Most people either hard-boil them or whatever, scrambled eggs and all that kind of stuff. So just the heating alone is going to take care of anything that more than likely was in the egg.
I put raw eggs in my smoothies, Peter. But so that begets the question that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking is this avian or chicken TB transmissible to people?
Yes. Way, way back, it was thought that most of these things, like this one is called Mycobacterium avium, and the one that infects cattle is Mycobacterium bovine. The one that infects humans is Mycobacterium tuberculosis, tuberculin. And they all jump around now, cross species. So it is a problem. That's why they're looking at the cattle and trying to eradicate it in cattle. And, I wouldn't even say in cattle it's a big deal, especially milk cows, because, the milk is going to be pasteurized and the organism will be killed off in the pasteurization process. But, this can be a problem, just like anything else. What bothers me about any of it, whether it's avian tuberculosis or human or E. coli or anything else, is the fact that there is more and more antibiotic resistance out here every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know that on the human side that it is resistant to almost every antibiotic they can throw at it. And so it just concerns.
Well, that's true in people too. I mean, that's why the long term, months of treatment of multiple drugs.
Yep.
That's why compliance is so hard, because it's such a long treatment.
Yeah, that's why again, letting people live on the street is not a smart idea, but it's what has caused the problem to get to where it is, at least on the human side. I don't see this as being a big deal so much on the poultry side, but it's something to know. It's something to know that's out there, and if you ever hear about it or whatever, you at least know what the scoop is on it.
Yeah, Peter, there's a question in the chat room, and that's about using lysine. This is from Indiana Chick. She says, is lysine good to use? Let me just get it here. Talk about using lysine as an antiviral. It's cheap, it's over the counter, and she takes it when she's exposed to anyone who is sick or feeling badly. She also takes a hot bath, and I'm a lysine fan as well. What do you think about that, Peter?
I have no knowledge of it whatsoever. I mean, I've heard of it, but I've never investigated it personally myself. I don't know. I'd want to see some research other than the fact that I took it and nothing happened. For instance, if you were never exposed to a virus, you could take that stuff till your head fell off and you'd turn around and look at it and say, well, gee, it's always protected me, and maybe not. You can't catch a cold, and neither can a chicken catch coryza or CRD or Marex unless they're exposed to those bacteria or virus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know people that breeders and stuff that raise chickens and what have you, and you know they say, I don't vaccinate for Marex just for argument's sake, and I don't have the disease. Well, if you don't have disease, that means you were never exposed to it. And they say, well, I breed for resistance. Well, I want to know then how you know that you're breeding for resistance, because unless you're actually, and they may be, they may have some natural resistance that, that they've had. But the point being, when you run up against a real virulent strain of it, then what happens? That's my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's inevitable. I mean, everything is evolving, diseases as well as us, as well as our systems.
And I hate to keep going back to the commercial poultry industry, but in all honesty, if some of these things worked, they would jump on it like you wouldn't believe, because, you know, if they could just up the lysine content in their feed and do away with a lot of these things, they would do it. There's no question. I mean, I worked in that industry for a long time, and I know how they operate. You know, if they can see the return on a dollar, they will invest it. If they can't, they're not. And a lot of the things that we read about different herbs and things of that nature, maybe even this lysine, don't have any credible scientific studies to back them up. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. And who's going to do a study on something like lysine, for example?
Nobody.
Patent there.
That's right. Nobody's going to spend the money. Back in the 80s, just to get a new drug approved for use in the poultry industry was in excess of $10 million with research and all those kind of things. You know, and years ago, you know, when there weren't so many companies making antibiotics and researching stuff and competition from European countries, a company would put a product out and look to recover their money in 10 years. So they project sales over 10 years, and so pill XYZ costs 50 cents. But
mm-hmm.
now, due to all the competition and the rapidly changing antibiotics, the new ones that are coming out all the time, they want to recover their money in 2 to 3 years. So now you take that $10 million back then and you put it out over 10 years, you want to recover $1 million plus your profit every year. Now you want to take that $10 million and you want to put it over 2 or 3 years plus your profit. Your pill is going to be a hell of a lot more expensive.
It's yep.
And that's just part of the way it works. And I dare say, and I have no data updated, but I could probably find some, as to what it costs today to get either a human or an animal drug on the market, it's huge. That's why you see companies buying up other companies that have already done some of the work. To go and start another Intervet or Shearing Plough or Pfizer, it isn't happening. It's just not going to happen. The amount
mm-hmm.
of money it takes, the amount of
That's
time
right.
it takes to get something through the government red tape, forget it. So you
yeah.
better go buy another company that complements you, that has these things, already in place. And that's what they do.
Yeah. Well, in defense of lysine, I know it won't be. It's not going to be researched. I guess at the graduate level at some of the universities. But Peter, it does have some antiviral capabilities. And I know in cancer patients, what they'll do when they're taking treatment is they'll put they'll give them some lysine and put even some Saran wrap between their lips, and between the lysine and that Saran wrap, it can keep their lips from peeling off, which is the interesting thing. And then I also use it in ointments. I'll just put it in when I make balms or ointments. So anyway, that's a possible alternative therapy for a backyard block.
I'm not discounting anything you say or the other person who posed the question in the beginning. What I'm saying is that if you put it out there as a blanket thing, saying, you know, to use this when you have cancer, and then what if it doesn't work? You know,
right.
You waste all your time and effort with a product that doesn't work.
Right.
And, you know,
that hearsay evidence. But even, for example, Indiana Chick is the one that has been bringing this up. She says even her veterinarian has prescribed lysine for their cats with feline herpes. And I've heard of that from others as well.
Yeah.
I have heard
of that because I know somebody that had that problem themselves on the human side.
Feline herpes?
No, they had human herpes, and it did
human
help
herpes. Okay.
Yes, it did help the person, but it did not take the disease away, period. Because think about it, if it were capable of doing that, people who have herpes would jump on that like you don't know what.
That's true. Because it helps the
symptoms.
There's
a big difference between using something as a cure, and using something that is helpful. A big, big gap there, like the Grand Canyon, and I'm not saying that it won't work. I mean, you can use elderberry for that matter. You know, we know, and there is some evidence there that is scientific that does show that does work. It doesn't show that it'll work against every virus.
Can you use elderberry in chickens, Peter?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Can't hurt them a bit.
Okay, I had never thought of that.
Not hurt them a bit. Nope. As a matter
and
of
how,
fact,
how
I have,
do you give it? Is go
just
ahead.
Give it to them orally. If you take, I'm trying to think.
Elderberry wine.
No, there's a. I used to sell the stuff I'll think of it. boy, some days, brain is on tilt. But if you. If you go to the health
there's food probably store, there's probably a pill we can take for that, too.
But if you go to the health food store, Sambucol, I think, is the S-A-M-B-U-C-O-L. That's the one I would use because that was invented, or that particular potion was invented or discovered by an Israeli virologist, and she has done some of the work to show that against human flu viruses that it will shorten the course of the disease. Don't, you know, and that we have used in birds from time to time, that severe infections with fowlpox, and we did feel that there was a shortening of the course of the disease, but it didn't prevent anything. Okay, but that is available for both children and humans, or adults rather, or humans. But
I love this one. Calvin in the chat room says infectious coryza was cured with bacon grease. At least so he was told. And then he put laughing out loud in there, and I said, "Can you imagine if a human cold was cured by bacon? Oh my gosh, we'd have health. We'd have tons of fat, healthy people all around the country."
But you know, I'm not going to sit here and say to you that a particular item used by a person for a particular thing may or may not help. I have no evidence to prove it one way or another, but neither do the people taking it. Okay, and you know, and if you have a doctor diagnosed problem that's either bacterial or viral, and he tells you to take something, and it alone in short order cures it or takes it away, then maybe you're onto something. But you'll never see something that isn't patentable out there, other than when you see them out there. Now that's why people with herbs and all those kinds of things. That's all of the things that have been made about them. Turmeric is another one. And I have seen the research on the chicken side, but I've never really seen any studies on the human side. But they make great claims for that particular product. And I'm not going to say it doesn't work. I know it works on the chicken side because I've seen the work. But that's what it all boils down to. But anyway, we got a little bit off subject here.
That's all right.
This can be spread, obviously, by human contact, stepping in droppings that are contaminated, free-flying birds, almost anything that comes in contact with it because of its hardiness and its ability to live well outside the bird's body lends itself to that. The bovine and the avian tuberculosis readily infects swine, mink, rabbits, sheep, pigeons. Rodents can be carriers, and we've all talked about rodents here a couple, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was. So let's get quickly to some of the other things. Some of the symptoms you might see with this, ruffled feathers and a severe loss of weight. They will appear very unthrifty and droopy-winged. You need to decide whether this is coccidiosis or not, okay? The birds can get very pale-headed. If you open the mouth, the mucous membranes in the mouth will be pale. There won't be that pinkish color that we're all used to seeing. The comb will be, and the wattles will be shrunken up and almost white. The lameness is a problem with it as well. Unwillingness to move, lethargy, all of these things. And it is a slow developing thing. It's not something that it takes a long time. There are documented cases where it has taken years to develop itself within a flock, and that may be because people were treating for something else rather than what was actually there.
Oh, really? So
mm-hmm.
It can take that long to it kind of simmers just below
yep.
the surface, huh?
Yep. Yep.
Interesting.
And also, we usually see this in older birds rather than younger birds because of the time frame that it takes to develop. So it is one, like you said, Pat, will sit there and simmer.
Mm-hmm.
The diagnosis for exposure, the tuberculin tine test, just as it's usually what they do is they stick it in the wattles, and stick it in one wattle and use the other one as the control, and the test is read after 48 hours. And again, it'll appear as a swelling or a mosquito bite type thing. Okay. During post-mortem examination, enlarged liver, that is usually then covered with these little tuberculin nodules. They'll appear grayish to yellow looking. Anybody seen a normal liver will certainly realize that any of these things show up on a liver that is obviously not normal. They can be just a few, or they can cover the entire both lobes of the liver. Nodules could also be found in the intestines, and this would lend itself to the reason why we see this in the droppings of birds.
Okay.
Prevention: keeping an open mind. Once you have a flock that's sick, trying to decide whether it's coccidiosis or something like that. Pigeon people have a tendency to, when they, I deal with a lot of folks who race pigeons and stuff, and I've written a racing program for these people. That's how they operate. But they always will call and they say, my pigeons are going light. Well, going light is a symptom. It's not a disease directly. And
going light meaning losing weight or
yes, losing breast tissue and really not weighing very much compared to what it should weigh. So you have to keep that in mind as well. Older birds that are being medicated but not responding to medication and they're just continue to waste away. That can also be lymphoid leucosis, so you have to take a look at that as well. Keeping a closed...
What was that, Peter? What was that could also be?
Lymphoid leucosis, or what we call big liver disease. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
But, you know, yep, you're welcome. But other than that, that's about it. That's basically, we've run pretty much through it. I don't think I'd lose a whole lot of sleep over it. I think it's wise to know it's there, and you know that it can be a problem. And I think that down the road, as we see more and more backyard flocks, it may be a problem. I don't know. Well, time will tell. Time will tell.
Well, I hope not in backyard flocks anyway. At least.
Seems
like they'd be healthier, doesn't it?
Well, I think for the most part they probably are. Yeah. But you know, I was listening to your before I got on it, while I was in queue, I was listening to you talk about different places. Providence, Rhode Island has just approved recently people to keep poultry in their yards as well. And they've restricted it to one hen for every 800 square feet to a maximum of 6 birds. No roosters, no slaughtering birds on your premises, and what the heck was the other thing they had a restriction on? Oh, you can't keep them in your house.
They actually put that in the code?
Yes. Can't
You're
keep
kidding.
Your
That's yep. a first for me.
Yep. You can't,
yeah,
keep, your can't keep your chickens in the house.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Some wacko politician. Well, who else? And then one other thing I wanted to say. Somebody had said, in relation to arguing with your local board or whatever, I wouldn't bring up, because I don't think it's helpful to bring up the fact that barking dogs and everything else, they don't listen to you.
That's true.
They really don't. And I know this from the fact when I've gone before committees about avian influenza and so on and so forth, they don't care what's going on in the commercial poultry industry. They care what's going on with you and your thing, and that's where you've got to hit them, that people live very comfortably with these birds all over America. And there's no reason and no rhyme nor reason why people can't keep a few chickens in the backyard. And the fact that a few hens clucking around in the backyard will keep a kid from sleeping, I don't
so
buy
what?
That one either.
Yeah, no.
I don't buy that one either.
Okay.
But
great.
Whenever you go to these things, you need to have all the evidence you can for the positive side of this thing, because they will try to come at you in any way they can. They'll lie, cheat, and steal
it's
just
true.
Like any other politician anywhere else.
Yep, so, you're right.
And I'll leave you with this one note. You all may know the answer to it, but... what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Now,
the
scientists
dinosaur.
In Europe, scientists in Europe, yeah, are saying the egg because the chickens are so related to the lizards or the dinosaurs
nope,
or what
nope.
have you.
There's
that was
a bunch of British researchers that found a particular protein that's available only in the hen's ovaries that. Is responsible for hardening the shell, and that's the only place it shows up. So the egg had to come first.
Yeah, the egg, yep.
That's what they're saying. It's food for thought anyway. Doesn't make them right, just...
yeah, but where did the hen come from?
So,
oh, it's one of those perpetual, it's one of those Conans.
It
you know,
always...
Think about it, you,
on
yeah.
and on and on, isn't it? So.
Isn't it? Okay. Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My
yet
pleasure.
Again, I'm counting. I've got 4 pages of notes here, and we've been talking with Peter Brown. He's the First State Vet Supply and known as the Chicken Doctor. So, Peter, thank you so much for sharing your all your information. It's always an
honor. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Okay. Very good. Okay, Whisper.
Yeah, you're going to be able to see, if you come out to the Ohio National, you'll be able to see me. You'll be able to see probably our great folks from eggcartons.com. You'll be able to see the great folks from Maniplo Pro. You'll be able to see the great folks from Meyer Hatchery. You'll be able to see me. And, of course, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. He will have his booth there as well. So it's going to be awesome. You got to try to get up there, even if it's a day's drive and a $39 hotel stay, try to get to the Ohio National, biggest ever show ever in the history of the American Bantam Association, according to their statement that I got via email from them today. So try to make that trip. It'll definitely be worth your while. And thank you all for tuning in today. We'll be back tomorrow with another great episode of
the Back Home Magazine Hour with Richard Frudenberger. So you tune in tomorrow, and don't forget to sign up for that webinar. There's less than 200 seats left. That's going to be coming up on Friday the 5th. Pat, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'd also like to say, while you, of course, Whisper, while you're at the Nationals, I'll be at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. It's in New York, so if anyone's up there in New York or wants to attend the ALBC conference, please come on up. It's November 11th to the 13th. Okay, and of course, Peter, thanks again for coming on. Peter's the chicken doctor from First State Vet Supply. Andy Schneider, thanks to you for bringing us all together. Without you, we wouldn't be here. And, of course, our chat room's chicken ears and all our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you either, so thank you for plucking along. And thanks to blogtalkradio.com for bringing the radio, chat, and video services. And always and forever, more blessings to all, and may the flock be with you. God bless everybody. Ha ha.